Welcome back to hour number two here at BTS Radio, 980 WCAP on your dial, or you can listen to us live anywhere in the world at www.980wcap.com. All right, so back to Beneath the Surface, hour number two. I am here with my guests, Ms. Kathleen LaPlante, author of Unraveling My Father's Suicide, and Jennifer Madeline, mental health worker. Now, we talked last hour about the importance of the form of the family, the importance of the affirmative and the consolation that comes from having a mother and father in the house. But of course, we also mentioned the fact that because life isn't perfect, we have many ways to try to alleviate and alleviate the problems that we're given, the cards that were dealt, in order to choose the better of the evils wherever we can. Now, having said that, we then got into the notion of definition, of meaning, of confusion that comes from a lack of definition that parents give children. And during the break, Kathleen, you had mentioned the fact that even though the breakdown of the family certainly contributes to the imbalance and the confusion that people have growing up today as they're being formed, some of this, of course, could also and or be a biological problem.
Right.
What does that mean?
That, you know, in my family, there's six kids, and I don't think, well, no, I know that the other five have struggled to the extent that I have with depression and medication and trying to figure out what's going to work and what's not going to work. And I guess what I wanted to say was that there's a biological component. The genes that I have may be a little bit weaker for social stress, familial stress, than say my other brothers and sisters. And so so that just means that I may end up with depression while other people in my family don't.
Yeah,
so you might be more vulnerable to it, so certain traits. And I think that ties in with the personality styles we were talking about before, but also there's the brain chemistries, there's the various impacts of hormonal changes that might be occurring. So there's, we don't want to deny that that side of the challenges of depression, because we are body and soul, and so the role of the family is important, the role of the world and how overwhelming it is and its negative messages, or how it could be supportive if it had positive messages are important, but just our own particular individual makeup. I like how you emphasize that within each family can be can differ, but it also could be that you're more vulnerable and you don't have something that activates the depression too. I mean,
so
you
we
have
all
significant
have,
events.
We all have various inclinations, and sometimes external life events trigger those inclinations in different ways.
And your order in the family could be one of them.
That could be one of them.
Yeah, that's true.
978-454-4980 is our phone number if you want to get involved in this conversation. So then am I getting you two right that there is a place for psychiatric medication?
Yes.
I would say so.
Do you think that it's being I'm not getting a professional opinion, but just a general response. Do you think it's being overused today?
I don't really know. I don't think I have a good handle on that.
I think you could say yes if it's used in isolation from trying to actually process what may have triggered it beyond the biological issue. So, I mean, you might become more depressed because of thyroid problems or menopause or things like that. So you need to see what it is that's triggering it physically. But often you're not, there's some other compounding factor. And so you need to also process that and learn strategies to help you face the depressive moments.
But do you think that very often in life, depression is a natural thing that should be worked out on one's own rather than short-circuited with medication?
I think it's a both and, depending on the person. Because of that biological component, you might need to get the chemicals back in
balance. Well, it just might be that you, no matter what you do, you know, you try and it's biological. So until you address that component, then, you know, you can go for massage and go for yoga.
But I just wonder at what point you stop trying and go for the medication. In other words,
if a
family member dies, for example, and you go into a depression and you're very sad and it continues to hurt and hurt and hurt years later, maybe even decades later, is there anything wrong with that? I mean, isn't that a natural feeling? Isn't that something that is supposed to happen when you lose a loved one?
It depends on how well you can function in your day.
Okay.
That's a diagnostic criteria.
And you would say?
I think that's a good point. Or how well are you functioning? But you're right. You don't want to be dependent on a medication. You want to also have that sense of self-efficacy be rebuilt in with developing new skills, or as I said earlier, you know, processing it and finding the meaning, the memories, whatever it is that can help with honoring that grief, because you do want to allow the grief. It is normal and natural. So you don't, it just because you're sad after you have a loss doesn't mean you necessarily go straight to get medication so you don't feel. That's not what I'm pointing to when I say it's both and. Medication doesn't have to be the first answer and the first recourse.
No.
And you don't necessarily want it to be because if you don't have a biological issue, you're giving yourself something, some chemicals that aren't going to help.
So for me, and I talk about this in my book, I think I was struggling and not functioning, and I had two little kids and I had an engineering job and I had a husband and I was not functioning very well. But now here I am, new to therapy and all that stuff, thinking this is going to be like Bob Newhart or something.
Yes, exactly. You know, like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
with all the comedy that goes on with it.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So my therapist recommends medication at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And I just flipped out. I thought to, and I said to him, like, how can you say that? That's like my father with alcohol, and you're telling me to take medication.
Mm, interesting.
Know, I just didn't really get the medication thing.
Well, there's a stigma to taking medication.
Well, yeah.
For many people.
Yeah. So I went a whole year.
Okay.
Before I decided to try medication, and in that year, I struggled really hard.
I just wonder how many people try to bury their pain rather than to face it head on and to just die with it for a while and really, really try to work through it.
Well, and I think that's what she's saying. She did.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You, for that year, you were trying to dive in head first and it wasn't...
Right. I was white-knuckling it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And until I addressed the biological issue, then I couldn't get any relief, really. But, you know, here's my take is that I want to put a positive spin on psychotherapy and, you know, counselors and psychiatrists and stuff.
Yeah.
My take is that they're pretty knowledgeable. Now, I've gone through many psychiatrists in terms of medication where it wasn't that he wasn't knowledgeable. It was just that I did not like him. And
okay.
So it's a little different, but I think that they're trained and that I don't think they would let their client take medication and not address the issues.
There are some psychiatrists who might do that, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
<Okay.
laughs> I wish not, but I mean, from what I've heard, but not always. You're absolutely right. Best practice, that's not the way that we want to, I mean, I'm not a prescribing provider in it by any means, so that's not my area of expertise, but that's why some people do need the medication to help clear the cloud so that they can see what's going on and work through it from there. So I don't want to minimize for listeners the importance of taking medications if their providers are saying that they need it. And at the same time, I don't want to, I think it's also important to emphasize this other point. You need to go to a therapist too. Do both and. And some might need something, even a third thing, instead of either one of those two. It might be a spiritual side or issue that needs to be clarified and journeyed through. It might be all three. And so this is where you do need to be discriminating in terms of, I know that's a fun word, be deliberate about who you're going to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, it might not be a good match personality wise, but it also might be that they're not competent and something is helping you see that. So learning how to ask those questions.
Really quick, Ritalin, ADHD for children. What do you guys think? Too much?
I should say I get wary about it. I get a little anxious about it, but it's definitely coming from ignorance.
Yeah. I'm ignorant too, so I'll just say something out of my ignorance. It just seems like children cannot be children anymore today, or else there's something wrong with them. Mm-hmm. If they act like children, if they don't want to be in a in a concrete building for 6 hours a day in a hard chair listening to somebody who's 30 years older than them talking about something that they're absolutely not interested in.
Trying to talk about something personal?
Children want to go out and play. They want to climb trees. They want to use their imagination and their creativity. Right. I think that we stifle a children's creativity, their personalities, and we tell them to be, basically we make them be little adults, even though they're not. Mm-hmm. And because what does a concrete classroom do? It fosters thinking and reasoning. And, you know, you don't experientially learn much in a concrete classroom with desks. You've got to, and children are more experiential learners. So seems to me that when children act like children, they're looked at askance today. And I don't like that movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, my son's kindergarten teacher, was all upset because my son just, you know, was acting out and not doing the right thing, blah, 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 blah. And I said to her, I said, you know, do you realize that my son's a kinesthetic learner? And she didn't really say anything. But basically, I recommended to her, like, if you want to teach him about math and numbers, tape money to the wall and have him walk and get the money and subtract and add whatever, and that's how he's going to learn. He's not going to learn.
Great awareness of your son. Yes.
Yeah, he's not going to learn sitting in a desk.
And you know what? I don't think that boys are allowed to be boys today anymore either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I used to play cops and robbers with the neighborhood kids, and we had our toy guns, cowboys and Indians. I always wanted to be an Indian. I don't know why. Don't ask me. I thought Indians were way cooler than cowboys. But you can't do stuff like that anymore because it is seen as a threat.
It's not PC.
Oh, yeah.
No. It's too politically incorrect today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. So, Kathleen, since you went through, you have a lot of experience to share, why don't you continue a little bit with what happened to you as you continued on your journey. You were married, you said, you were a child, you had a very difficult time functioning.
Yeah.
Functioning as in going to work, as in getting out of bed, as in cooking a meal. What does that mean?
I could go to work and I could cook the meal, but I was completely disconnected from it. And so it was like I had no presence in whatever I was doing.
Kind of acting robotically or like a
zombie.
Shell.
Yeah,
like
and
a zombie. Good.
Right. And what I had was a lot of sadness just contained within me, but I would not let it out.
Now, was this directly from, and I hear the music, we need to take a break, but is this sadness that you're carrying around, this deep sadness, was it from your father's suicide or was it from other things before that or a both and?
I think it's both. Mm-hmm. There's things that happened with my peers, things that happened with my brothers and sisters, things that happened at school, you know, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Not just my father.
All right. We need to take a break. My name is Paul Morano. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, talking about the topic of depression and lack of hope here on WCAP 980 on your dial. Be back right after this. What? Back here on Beneath the Surface Radio here at WCAP in beautiful downtown Lowell, 980 AM on your dial, where everybody gets it. I'm Paul Morano. My guest tonight on Beneath the Surface Radio is Kathleen LaPlante.
Hi.
You interrupting me? Kathleen LaPlante and Jennifer Madeline, mental health worker and author of the new book, Unraveling My Father's Suicide. All right, so here's what we got so far. Ladies, everybody suffers. None of us are brought up in a perfect situation. Mm-hmm. We have all of us in some way or another, even though we might have a mother and a father, all of us are in some kind of high-level or low-level dysfunctional family. Some of us, no, I would say all of us have been brought up in a dysfunctional culture.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dysfunction out there.
Mm-hmm.
We live in an imperfect post-Eden world.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This necessarily means every single person walking around today has a heavy heart in some way or another. Now, very often, joyful things in life sort of take that away or enable it to heal here and there. But still, everybody's walking around with some sadnesses, some woundedness in their hearts, regardless of how functional they seem to be. So, here's my question to you two, because I know that both of you are not only intellectually astute when it comes to mental health issues, but you also have a spiritual awareness of the human person. Is this suffering that everybody secretly goes through, some more secretly than others, can it be turned into a good thing? And if not, how do we deal with it?
Can suffering be turned into a good thing?
Yes.
So just said. Okay.
Can good come out of suffering? Can you use it to bring about greater happiness, joy, peace, or hope in one's life? Or is it always going to be a sword in one's heart until the day one dies?
Well, for me, I would say that I can use it. And that's one of the ways I've learned. Back in 97, I had a conversion back to Catholicism. And
back to Catholicism from?
Right.
Oh, practical atheism?
Protestant.
Oh, Protestant.
Protestant, yeah.
Okay.
So I had this conversion, and it's taken me quite a number of years to get there, but to the point of being able to use my suffering to pray for other people and to unite my suffering to Jesus's suffering on the cross so that not just me but others can benefit from that spiritually.
There's a lot to unpack there. Let me try a little of it. All right.
Go for it.
Okay. Number one, you're saying that suffering itself is a pain, which means it's a physical evil. It's not something that's good. But mm-hmm. you can take that and bring a great good from that by uniting your own suffering to the suffering that Christ performed on the cross for the atonement of sin and the salvation of souls.
Yes.
Now, that's a whole lot of theological jargon that people who aren't religious may not fully understand or relate to. So let's try to break it down a little bit, and Jennifer, you can jump in here any time you want. Christianity, in a sense, or faith in Christ, transforms suffering into something that can never be brought out, something that can never be good, because it is an evil, it hurts, to something that can be good by virtue of saving other people, including yourself. Here's the first theological question when it comes to that. Now, you're a Catholic. Isn't it part of Christian theology that the suffering of Christ on the cross is all that is needed for the salvation of souls?
I don't think so. Doesn't St. Paul talk about that? How basically that we can add to his suffering.
Yeah, he says something like, I unite my suffering to what is lacking
Yes.
in the crucifixion of Christ for the salvation of souls.
And you go, lacking?
Now, on the surface, yeah. Many people would say that. What do you mean lacking? I mean, he was the God-man, and his sacrifice atoned for all possible sin. So then, what does this mean, Jennifer, if you want to jump in, that the head needs the body in the mystical body of the mystical person of Christ in order to cooperate with it for the salvation of the world?
Well, that's a nice big mouthful. So, well, I think, you know, I was just looking at a quotation by Viktor Frankl, so who was a psychiatrist and a Holocaust survivor in Austria, and he's written many books like Man's Search for Meaning and based on these experiences. And I liked this one quotation, that each one of us has our own specific vocation or mission in life. So we each have a specific role, and part of that will assist in contributing to the salvific work that what you're mentioning.
Yeah.
And it's very unique, and we can only answer for our own life, and in doing that we might search for meaning through our suffering, and it might be sharing our suffering with others so that they can see how we have overcome it. It might be taking time and reflecting and seeing, you know, how did I grow, you know.
I was gonna mention that. So suffering now can be seen as almost like a medicine.
Yes.
Right? Because we all know that we are imperfect in many ways, each one of us a little different than the other. There's an old saying that suffering can make you either bitter or better, depending on your attitude.
We think of it, no pain, no gain, what they say for the athlete. You want to hurt, you know, after your muscle weightlifting, and it's a sign of something. I know nothing really about exercising, but the no pain, no gain.
Yes.
You know, you're hurting, you're strengthening your muscles, and you have to
let them
suffering. Rest for a while in between stressing them out with the weights.
So I read something off the internet before we came in, and unfortunately, I forgot to write the source.
That's okay.
But there was this list of what suffering is. And
okay.
The first on the list was intimacy with God.
Suffering is intimacy with God.
Intimacy with God, yep. And suffering equips us to comfort others.
Well, before you go on, suffering is intimacy with God.
It's Job, you know.
Well, and it makes me think of, I think Pope John Paul II used to say this, that we really get to know who we are through encounter with another person.
Yes.
So suffering might be intimacy with God, because we're becoming intimate with Him,
yep.
and we're seeing ourselves and all that we lack.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there is good suffering and bad suffering.
And it ties into your father analogy of earlier, because he might be disaffirming certain aspects or disaffirming what we lack so that we can start filling it in with what we need. And so just like with the Father, we're seeing ourselves in truth.
So then there's a great distinction to be made between depression and despair, isn't there?
Yes.
So depression is an inner pain that you can actually, in some sense, your intellect anyway, can rise a little bit above it to judge it for what it is. And you can say, I am experiencing this horror now, but I know this isn't going to last forever, and I will, in a sense, pat it on its head and wait for it to be over with. Instead of somebody who says, "There is no hope. This is all there is. I need to end things."
Yeah, that was me.
Tell me about it.
No, seriously, and in my depression too, there was no hope. It was, you know, you said, this is all happening, but I know it's going to pass or whatever. Well, I didn't know it was going to pass. I had this really, really deep fear that every time I was up against suffering, up against a tough situation, that it was going to take everything out of me.
Yeah. And there was no way up.
And there was no way up, right. So
what changed for you then? How did your attitude change regarding your suffering?
You know, it was a lot of work. I mean, it was going from that year of saying no to medication,
yeah,
to being on medication ever since then. And I know, and I went off once, and I know what it did to me. So, like, I'm really certain that I have to be on the medication.
But you're saying the medication helps, but also the meaning helps.
The meaning definitely helps. And I didn't have meaning. I didn't have, you know, that's what a lot of that emptiness is.
You know, you know what it reminds me of, the meaning part? It reminds me of a pregnant woman giving birth. I mean, there could be some serious suffering going on there.
But there could
all,
be.
But
could be.
all during that 9 months of suffering, and that's, you know, that whatever it is, 12 hours or whatever it is of giving birth.
24.
Underneath all of that suffering is a realization. And it's not experienced emotionally necessarily, but one knows in their highest of high natures, their intellect, there's a realization that all of the suffering is going to be infinitely worth it.
And it's going to be over.
And it's going to be over soon, yeah. It's going to be over, and it's going to be worth it. Now, Kathleen, you have two children, so you know that that's true. So would you say that there's an analogy there relating to people who are going through some serious depression today?
I think the analogy... Well, okay, so realistically, I think the analogy is valid. But when you're in the depression, you don't think that it's going to end. You don't have hope. You can't even wrap your brain around what that is.
Yeah,
it's just like heavy. And so, it's...
Well, what saves you from it?
What saves me from it?
Yeah.
Why did you persist?
I want to say Jesus Christ, right?
Okay.
But even though I believe in Jesus and everything else, it does not mean that I will never be suicidal again, or that I will never be really depressed.
You would never have the feelings of
yes, those may suicide. All come my way again.
Yeah. But at least you're saying, though, that you're much more equipped to deal with those feelings.
Yes, and I'm not so afraid of the suffering. And I'm able to just kind of go with it instead of panicking and freezing up around the whole thing.
I think that's huge.
That is so huge.
You can allow yourself to suffer greatly, and you can feel the pain, but without that extra panic, that extra, which you just mentioned.
Yeah.
978-454-4980 if you want to give us a call, ask our panelists questions, or give your own experience here at Beneath the Surface Radio.
I think that's the mystery of depression and hopelessness, whether it's severe, you know, major depression, or it's, you know, more transitory, low grade. Is that ability to hold on to that greater truth, and to not let the emotions, I mean, putting aside the possible physical, you know, component to it, and really hold on to that truth that this too will pass, or this too I can add to an offering, you know, as part of the suffering. It does take great strength. So I think it's something that we have to sometimes relearn, or learn for the first time because it wasn't modeled,
right?
And
or taught,
or articulated, or helped informed, or we were so wounded by some tragic or traumatic event that we just that could also have, you know, caused a block to access our the strength that we had before to rediscover it.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
So I think that an analogy of really clearing the way is what's so important and key to healing.
Continue. No. I hear the music. Continue.
Oh, I don't.
All right.
Okay. That made me lose my thought. I'm sorry.
That's what I was afraid of.
What was I gonna say? For me, this was the other thing I was going to say about my faith. What it brought in my suffering was prayer and being able to have a conversation with God or the saints or any, you know, like just all of that. I'm not saying it's foolproof, but it's definitely another tool in the kit, you know, it's relieving. It's like somebody's there.
We're not
for
alone.
Me.
Yeah. We're not alone. And that's what hopelessness and depression also often tries to tell you.
Yeah.
After the break, I want to talk about that aloneness, because we live in an era of so much social media and other things that, in a sense, work backfire in the fact that we live in one of the loneliest times of human history. We'll talk about that and much more in our last 20 minutes here on Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio 980 on your dial. Back right after this. And we're back. Final segment here on Beneath the Surface Radio. Thanks for sticking with us. I'm Paul Morano with my guests, Miss Jennifer Madeline and Kathleen LaPlante, the latter of which just wrote a book called Unraveling My Father's Suicide, the former of which is a mental health worker who has worked in the past as a counselor at a eating disorder facility. Ladies, welcome back to our final segments. Thanks for staying up with me.
Sure.
Okay. Who's the most asleep out of all three of us?
I don't think anyone is anymore.
Okay. Oh, good.
Yep,
catching
we're all
our second wind. Excellent. I just want to read a couple of quotes here. All right. The first one is from Mother Teresa.
Okay.
The late, great Mother Teresa, from a book called A Simple Path. Quote, "The greatest disease in the West today is not TB or leprosy. It is being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for.
Mm.
We can cure physical diseases with medicine, but the only cure for loneliness, despair, and hopelessness is love. There are many in the world who are dying for a piece of bread, but there are much more dying for a little love. The poverty in the West is a different kind of poverty than what she's talking about when it comes to India and the East. It is a poverty of loneliness, but also of spirituality. There's a hunger for love, and as there is a hunger for God," unquote.
Mm-hmm.
In a nutshell, what does this say to you about today's world?
Well, that we are made for communion, whether it is ultimately with our Creator, and it's also with each other, and in our radical individualism that the society is trying to emphasize, we become the most impoverished because we don't know how to reach out, we don't feel the love that we're all supposed to experience through God, but also with each other and through each other.
Mm.
And so we don't understand and know where to find the source of our hope. And
it seems the more normal or natural order regarding this is God's life and love coming through channels like church, neighborhood, particularly family, parents, that trickles down to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we talked about in the first hour, often some of these lines of God's love are broken or are not there. They're absent.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, a lot of people, and maybe you want to talk about your own experience, even though the lines were absent or broken, still were able to experience God's love
mm-hmm.
despite that.
Right.
And that today is so important and yet lacking.
So, referring to the fact that I didn't have an intact family, for example, and yet for some reason I was able to hold on to a faith. And I still can't pinpoint it except for some divine intervention. But then again, you might then say, other people might say, well, why didn't I have it? And I think that it doesn't, I can't comprehend it. I haven't been able to put my finger on it either. I know I have been wounded in certain ways because of my family. And I think, like with Kathleen, you know, I had my own personality traits that were perfectionistic and and different things that I needed and need to overcome.
And yet you hear so much that when there's a broken family situation, boys act out in violence, girls act internally. Out in promiscuity.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas,
Or internally.
They harm themselves. Thanks be to God, that doesn't happen to everybody.
Right.
And I think that you're an example of that, and that we are able to. God allows us to experience His love more directly rather than through channels that maybe should be there that aren't.
Well, and I think it's also important to emphasize that, you know, yes, I was blessed in that way, and others in my family were not necessarily so blessed. And so how do we make sense of that? And then those who were not blessed in the exact same way I was, for whatever reason, where's their hope? Where are they going to find this experience of love and unconditional love from God if they didn't have this example of a father figure, for example, routinely there? And I think it's really important that we don't send the message that he's only sending it to certain people.
I think some people close their heart, and naturally you kind of want to close your heart to the person who's harming you in order to protect it. But you should never close your heart to God. He's not the one that's harming you.
And that's easy to say.
It's easy to say, but some people like yourself were able to do that. You close your heart maybe to certain persons until you get enough healing to open them fully, but you never close your heart to God.
Well, and we have to be careful, though, because sometimes the way we're first meeting God is through the person who's wounded us.
Right.
So we're going to, like the father figure who's missing, for example.
Yeah.
So you want to protect yourself from anything like that. So you might say you just can't keep your heart closed to him, but we might think we have to protect ourselves. And so the key there is everyone's role to help break that down gently, lovingly.
But I'm looking at it philosophically, and as much as God transcends all broken people, whether they be family members, society members.
And I'm looking at it personally
in
the sense that I don't want someone who is struggling with depression or hopelessness now to add to the self-hurting statements to themselves. That's redundant. That they might be saying, oh, so now I've also messed this up. I've closed my heart to God. No, there are other contributing factors and that might have influenced it. And now, yes, listen, let's try and find a way to open your heart back up.
Yeah. You can always reopen one's heart.
Yes. And it might be hard and scary. Yeah. And it's who do we find out who can help us? Friends, family, psychologists, whatever, priests, spiritual advisors. In this case, it might be more that we need to go to the spiritual side.
God loves us regardless of people that abuse us.
Mm-hmm.
Kathleen, would you have anything to say about that?
I would say, then why is he letting this abuse
exactly
happen?
Why does he allow it?
And
that's a whole theological show on free will and the difference between God's positive will versus God's permissive will, and why there's suffering at all in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why does God allow suffering at all? And we don't know exactly the best way to articulate that, but we do know that free-willed people cause other people harm, and in a sense, it's their fault and not God's. why God allows it, you know, we can get into that whole conversation about he can't rescind the gift of free will, and then we wouldn't be persons if he did that. Mm-hmm. And he would contradict his own nature to take away the gift that he gave us. So there's a lot to go into that, why innocent people suffer. But one thing we do know that we had mentioned before is that a great good can come out of suffering, and that we can use suffering to better ourselves and to better other people.
And that's what makes there be hope in the midst of this heavy weight. Okay, like you said, if you can recall that this too will pass, and then two, okay, well, look, I am not helpless. But in what way? How can I figure that out? I have survived this far with this, so what, why, and how? And now I want to do more than survive. I want to figure out how to thrive. And just taking it one step at a time.
Another quote from a Dr. Miriam Grossman, psychiatrist who worked with on the campus counseling center at UCLA. Recounting the devastating effects of casual sex amongst her patients in her book Unprotected, she writes, "Almost daily, I prescribe medication to help students, mostly women, cope with loss and heartbreak." Are we as adults, and I'm going to say this harshly because I think it needs a little zing to it, are we as adults abusing children by neglecting to teach them that sex outside of marriage almost always causes devastating heartbreak and much pain and much regret?
It's vital to teach sexual morality and purpose without a doubt. And the beautiful excitement of it in its unitive and procreative sides, and that what makes it so beautiful is that it is permanent and monogamous and after marriage, because it can't be once you have that commitment.
Well, what is love? I mean, isn't love an unconditional commitment? Isn't this why we suffer from sadness and depression? Ultimately, is because we don't experience that unconditional love,
like Mother Teresa said.
Yeah, that comes from an unconditional commitment, a commitment that says, "I love you, despite your failings, despite your weaknesses."
Well, there's marital love. It's like you've had on prior shows. Which love? In this case, the marital love is reserved for the marriage state. And if not, because of all, like this Dr. Grossman was saying, we become objects of pleasure instead, and we know that innately in our heart. It's no longer permanent and reserved for that one person to whom you've committed your life as spouse.
Yeah, it's a gift that has been given when it should never have been given.
Right.
And hence there's I don't know what the statistics are, but there's deep regret among people for giving themselves away before marriage. And yet young people hear this from nobody. It's one of the greatest things in our world today that wounds people.
Yes.
People are the walking wounded because of sexual sin.
Right.
Yet, it's too politically incorrect. People don't have the courage because of the secular leftist world that we live in that tells us that sex is what the world, the full meaning of life, and it's
momentary pleasure.
It's momentary pleasure. There's no meaning or purpose behind it. Kathleen, what can we do about this to have people like Dr. Grossman have less women coming to her wounded like this?
Honestly, I think that it all has to start in the family life. That structure needs to be put back in place. And, other than that, there's got to be some education. And the thing is I say education and I'm like cringing at the same time, because I just know that there's so many academic environments that are not conducive to saying this information or bringing this information in a healthy, loving way. So I don't know. I keep going back to the family.
But can you ever have an intact family again without faith? What is the glue that keeps
these
families
days?
Together?
I don't know.
There's so much temptation today.
Well, there's so much movement to break up marriages. Right.
There's so much movement. There's so much movement not to get into marriages in the first place.
Right. Well, you know, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. To use people before without marriage and to make babies without marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sex marriage baby making, you know, it used to be seen as three dimensions of the same reality, has been completely broken up today. First, because of contraception, and for other reasons. Now, is it possible? I mean, it seems like it all boils down to we need to have and I think the Baltimore riots and so many other things we've seen lately point to this, that the breakdown of the family is a huge part of the problem. Can the family get back intact, which means respecting marriage before marriage, and respecting marriage during marriage, and respecting the family? Can we ever have that unconditional love, that self-sacrificing communion of persons known as the family, intact again without a religious commitment to God and then to each other?
I was going to say, in all good things can happen with God. But you just said no God, so.
No. Yeah, just saying. Yeah. You're saying at least it is possible,
yes.
with faith. Jennifer, any last word?
I just wanted to share the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline for those who might need extra support. 1-800-273-8255.
One more time.
1-800-273-8255. That's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and just to always know that there is hope. Just as Kathleen just said.
Jennifer Madeline, Kathleen LaPlante, thank you so much. Buy Kathleen's book. It's out there on the internet. It's called Unraveling My Father's Suicide by Kathleen LaPlante. A great read, and we're going to have her back to talk about that book in detail one of these days soon. I'm Paul Morano. You've listened to Beneath the Surface tonight, 9 to 11 Monday nights. Thanks, everybody, and I hope you are receiving the help that you need and getting the peace that you desire. So long, everybody. See you next week.